This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
And good evening. Welcome to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers sitting in for Jeff Mellor. He is off. He'll be back next Saturday as we bring you White Sox Weekly every Saturday, depending on when the game starts tonight. The White Sox are on the West Coast, or actually Mountain Time Zone. They're in Denver. So White Sox Weekly late in the day here. I'm with you till 7:30, two full hours of White Sox conversation heading into the Sox and Rockies. Marquez versus Jonathan Cannon as the White Sox look to take it two in a row. But we'll talk with you about this team. And obviously this show took a turn about an hour ago when the White Sox announced that former closer and World Series champion Bobby Jenks had passed away at the age of 44. Not necessarily unexpected, but still surprising news to hear on this Saturday afternoon, just a few hours before the White Sox take the field in Denver against the Rockies. So a little bit of a shift on the show. We'll still talk White Sox, current day White Sox, of course. Josh Barfield, one of the assistant general managers, will join me at the top of the hour from Denver. So we'll talk about last night's win and obviously Colson Montgomery's debut. And Josh has his hand in everything, especially player development. And obviously this team has debuted 11 players this year. So we'll dive into that with Josh. But throughout the show, we'll be talking about Bobby Jenks, the legacy. I mean, this happens a week before this team celebrates its 20th anniversary of the 2005 championship, a championship that Bobby Jenks was a big part of. It all happened late for him. He only had six regular season saves, but he was the guy in the postseason. He had four more in the 2005 playoffs and eventually help close it out as the White Sox beat Houston to win the World Championship. So unfortunately, Bobby Jenks won't be part of the live celebration next week as he passed away a couple hours ago. Or he actually passed away yesterday, was announced a couple hours ago. But I'm sure he will be there in spirit next weekend. And there will be many, many stories told about one Bobby Jenks. And we will hear from someone that was integral to the White Sox and, of course, Bobby Jenks in just a few minutes. The great A.J. Pierzynski, his catcher during that run, will join me. And, of course, A.J. was there for a lot of the good years with Bobby Jenks, who went on to save a whole bunch of games for the White Sox. I mean, he pitched 7 years, but the last year didn't even earn a save with the Red Sox. He was with the White Sox for every single save of his career and then finished off that 2011 season with the Red Sox. So 173 career saves, all in a Chicago White Sox uniform. As I mentioned, six that first season. Then he had 41, 40, 30, 29, 27. And then he went on to the Red Sox for that final year. So a stalwart in the back end of the pen for the Chicago White Sox for many years. But we remember him because of 2005. He was kind of larger than life, figuratively and literally, if you know what I mean. Kind of a bigger guy, but he got the job done. It was so much fun to see him run in from the bullpen to shut down a game in the ninth inning. And he did it often for the White Sox, especially in that 2005 playoff. So we'll talk to A.J. Pierzynski about him. I want to talk to you. This is a moment, if you're old enough, to reminisce about Bobby Jenks. Maybe you had an interaction with him, or you just simply want to talk about watching him on the mound, especially in 05 when they won it all. So we'll open up the phone lines throughout the show. 312-332-3776 is the phone number. Again, my name is Jesse Rogers, sitting in for Jeff Mellor, who is usually in this seat, so I will keep it warm for him. He'll be back next week, and we'll talk to A.J. Pierzynski in just a few minutes. Josh Barfield at the top of the hour. Scott Merkin from MLB.com will discuss Colson Montgomery's debut with him, but he's been around forever. He covered Bobby Jenks and that 05 team, and he'll be covering the reunion next weekend as well. So we have a lot to do over the next couple hours. Afterwards, I'll hand it off to Len and DJ after our pregame show, and they'll have the call of tonight's game. Jonathan Cannon takes the mound against Germán Márquez as the Rockies and White Sox go at it. White Sox had a nice win last night in Colson Montgomery's debut. We'll get to that with Josh Barfield in a little bit. But the White Sox just released this. It's on their YouTube page. I think they tweeted it out as well. Let's get to a little White Sox tribute on one Bobby Jenks, who passed away at age 44 today.
Game one to the White Sox.
One thing about Bobby, I saw him throw first day of spring training. I see this big man over there, like, who the hell is that? And first day, throwing gas.
He gone. Yeah. Scouts will tell you the best pure power in the majors comes out of the right arm of Bobby Jenks. It had him as high as 102.
I mean, Bobby was kind of ahead of his time. I mean, there's a lot of guys now that throw like Bobby, but like when he first came up, I'm not sure there was anybody that looked like him from like a stuff standpoint, where he was, you know, hitting 100 on every single pitch with just a vicious curveball. And I mean, he was embarrassing guys, good hitters, right away.
And Bobby Jenks has tied a major league record. He tied 41 consecutive hitters. Unbelievable.
Bobby, game changer. Bobby threw 100 or more with the nastiest breaking ball I've ever seen in my life. He was just an anomaly of unfathomable proportions. And as a teammate, he was the best. He's just a good person.
I mean, everyone knows and loves Bobby, and what he did was remarkable. He deserves his place in among the icons of this franchise's history.
Bobby earned his stripes, ended up the last one on the mound in October that year.
You play for the love of the game, the joy of it. It's what I love to do. I'm playing to be a world champion. And that's what I wanted to do from the time I could pick up a baseball.
Bobby Jenks, he'll be well remembered for that 2005 season and the years after that. He racked up a lot of saves for the White Sox, but the man, that 2005 year, and especially the postseason, was really magical, and he was kind of an iconic figure on that team. It's just sad that this happens a week before the reunion. It would have been great to see him. Obviously, he's been ill for a while. Talked to Scott Merkin about that in an hour. He's covered the Bobby Jenks saga. Really sad, such a young age, 44 years old, and he passes away due to stomach cancer. I'm not sure if I mentioned that earlier, a form of stomach cancer at least. And you heard some of the 2005 greats in that YouTube tribute the White Sox just put out. It's on their YouTube page as well. I'm Jesse Rogers, 312-332-3776. Ozzie Guillen was in there. Aaron Rowan was in there. A lot of the greats. And, again, you'll see and hear from a lot of them next weekend as the White Sox get together for the 20th anniversary of their 2005 World Series champion. 312-332-3776. Would love to hear your remembrances of Bobby Jenks. Again, if you had a personal interaction with him, if you just enjoyed watching him, if you loved it when Ozzie would go out to the mound and call for him. I mean, he was just one of those characters on a team full of them, and he was darn good and ahead of his time, as you heard in the tribute there. I mean, he was throwing gas before most guys were throwing gas. I mean, now everyone's throwing 100. This guy was up near 100 20 years ago, and he was just lights out. And again, not just in the World Series year. I mean, he really put up some huge years after that. 81 saves the 2 years after the World Series championship. And then another 30 after that, another 29 after that. So he was the guy in the back end for 5-6 years there. And will be very well remembered coming up during the reunion weekend with the White Sox next weekend. All right, we're going to take our first break, and then we hope to hear from A.J. Pierzynski. I know he's dealing with some family stuff, but he's kind enough to call in and go through some memories, because I want to know about Bobby on and, of course, off the field. Only a true teammate can tell us both personalities, the on the field and then the off the field as well. So A.J. Pierzynski due to join us in just a few moments. It is White Sox Weekly. I'm Jesse Rogers on ESPN 1000.
How do you add a little drama to an otherwise less than dramatic 6-0 ball game? You bring in Bobby Jenks, and you let him go for the all-time record of 41 consecutive batters retired. He's at 38, facing the bottom part of the order.
Knocked down. He is. What a bullet off the bat of Adam Jones.
Uh-oh.
Come on, Jermaine. Yes! Beautiful play by Jermaine Dye. There's a chopper. Come on, Juan. And Bobby Jenks has tied a major league record, retiring 41 consecutive hitters from a reliever's role, not a starter. Unbelievable.
Goosebumps listening to Hawk Harrelson go through that record-setting performance. Bobby Jenks setting down 41 in 2007, 41 straight to tie a mark in 2007. That is Goosebumps territory right there, folks. Jesse Rogers back with you on White Sox Weekly. If you didn't hear the news, former closer Bobby Jenks has passed away after a long illness. He had a form of stomach cancer. Happened yesterday. The family released and the team released the news today. 44 years old, just way too young, way too young. And the tributes are coming in. We're going to hear from A.J. Pierzynski live on this show. But the White Sox put out a press release with some comments. Here's Ozzie Guillen. Quote, Bobby Jenks is one of my all-time favorite players. I love that man. This is a very sad day for everyone involved with the White Sox. Everyone remembers the moment when he called for the big fella in the World Series. So the bobblehead of that moment will be a great way to keep that moment alive for White Sox fans. Everyone has a favorite story about Bobby. So the 2005 reunion will be a great opportunity to get together with all his teammates and coaches and relive some of the greatest memories of him. Well said by Ozzie Guillen. I'll read something from Paul Konerko. I don't need to read A.J. Pierzynski's statement because, fortunately, we have A.J. Pierzynski on the line. I thought he might be working a game tonight, but we are fortunate instead to have him on with us. He's not in the booth. I think he might be at a kids' game, a youth game, but he was Bobby Jenks' catcher, one of them, so we had to get A.J. on, one of the great all-time White Sox. A.J., good evening. Thanks. I appreciate you coming on. Tough day, though, for White Sox Nation. What was your reaction when you heard the news?
Just terrible news. You never really understand why. This is something that had been kind of coming for a while. But it doesn't make it easier, right? I know Toby Hall had been in touch with him, and he had been kind of keeping me updated. I talked to Bobby not that long ago with some text messages back and forth. And I know he really wanted to try to make it to next weekend. And sadly, there's going to be a giant hole next weekend when all of us are together and he's not there.
For sure. But his name, his presence will be there, you know, and the stories that will be told. Ozzie said everybody has one. I mean, you were his catcher. I don't know where to start with you. What's your favorite Bobby Jenks memory? I'm sure you've told a few, whether it be on the field or off. There has to be plenty in both areas, you know, during pitching meetings in the clubhouse and also on the mound.
I mean, the favorite memory is jumping into his arms after we win the World Series 20 years ago. I just remember thinking to myself, as the play is happening and as the last out is made, do not let Bobby jump on you, because if you do, you'll never get up. So I had to make sure I jumped on into his arms. There's so many Bobby stories. He's a legend of, you know, I said this to Sam Blum. He was doing an article on him. Mm-hmm. It's like, he's like Paul Bunyan, right? He mm-hmm. came from, what, Idaho, the woods of like Idaho and Eastern Washington. And, was just like this big lumberjack of a guy. But if you dug down through it, and listen, we all know Bobby had some problems, but mm-hmm. if you get through that, he had a good heart and he meant well. And, you know, it's just one of those things that, I don't even know how to put it into words, but there's so many Bobby stories and so many things about him and how good he was. I mean, one of my favorites, like I told, besides the World Series, is when Burley broke his record. You remember he set the record for the most consecutive guys retired at one point,
yep.
which is amazing for a reliever.
For sure.
Because he
yep.
was doing this three outs at a time. He wasn't doing – like Burley threw the perfect game, and then he kept getting guys out when he broke that record. But, you know, Bobby to do that as a reliever is still just an incredible, incredible feat. And then I remember in the Metrodome, and we knew that Burley was getting close to Jenks' record. And when he broke it, I went out to the mound – with Burley, and we both just looked in the bullpen at Bobby, and Bobby just had his head in his hands shaking because his head because he knew that we both knew what he was thinking. And, you know, just things like that, little things with Bobby. He was a gigantic human being, but, you know, sometimes he was a 12-year-old kid playing baseball, and the fire he brought. And listen, Bobby was a guy that had 100 before 100 was commonplace at all. He was like the first guy I saw through 100.
For sure. And that's what I wanted to ask you a little bit about is pitching, because we have younger fans listening. It's been 20 years, but not 20 years since the World Series. He was here after that for 5 years, saving games all over the place. But it was no sure thing. Fifth-round pick, 2000, like you said, out of the backwoods or whatever. You know, so it's not a sure thing. What made him as good as he was, just to be able to throw gas and throw it over the plate? I mean, it's, you know, control of the fastball is the first thing you need as a closer, right?
Well, he had 100 mile an hour before 100 miles an hour was, like I said, commonplace. I remember he came up and it was 98, 99. We're like, whoa. I remember PK was like, whoa, first time we saw him.
Yeah.
And then he threw a curveball and you were like, whoa, this is even better. And then he could throw strikes. The thing about Bobby that we always said was if he threw it over the plate, nobody was going to – if he came into the game with a two- or three-run lead, guys weren't stringing together two or three hits. It was a walk, and then maybe he'd make a mistake, and a guy might run into one. But there wasn't many times where Bobby went out and gave up three, four hits in a row. His stuff was too good. Then he learned a slider, and his ball cut a little bit naturally. And then just his presence on the mound. I mean, hitters looked out there, and they saw 6 foot four, 6 foot five, and he was, you know, 300-plus. I wasn't somebody you really wanted to mess with very much.
For sure. Visiting with A.J. Pruszynski, World Series catcher, here on White Sox Weekly. Always love talking baseball with A.J., but unfortunately we need to talk about a former teammate of his, as Bobby Jenks passed away yesterday at the age of 44 due to stomach cancer. You know, have you talked to him much over the years, you know, before he got sick? What was his life like at those times? I didn't see him too much at the ballpark, but – you know, I wasn't around the White Sox as much as you were. What was he like in the years afterwards?
I saw him every once in a while. I didn't talk to him a whole lot. He was living overseas. I know he was super excited about his job of the Windy City team that he was coaching.
Right.
In Chicago. He loved doing that. I know him and Toby Hall were very tight. I want to say Bobby was a coach maybe with the Rockies at one time, and he asked Toby to help him and come help him as a manager in the Rockies. I could be wrong on that, but I know. And Toby took over for him this year. His life was better, honestly. Listen, we all know Bobby had his problems, but he got sober. He's been sober for years, man. It's a credit to him because the things that, you know, he said this, the things he did to his body were not human. And the fact that he was still kicking after some of the things that he said he did was
great.
Was a miracle in itself. So, oh man, I mean, just I was so proud of him, and everyone that whenever I did see him, I did talk to him, you know, the fact that he had gotten sober, I mean, that was a miracle in itself because of what he had gone through. So, and he was moving on, he had a new family, and he was living over in Portugal, and just seemed like everything was going right, and then to be hit with this news was just awful.
Yeah, it really was. Last thing before I let you go, AJ, off the field, you know, big teddy bear kind of thing. That's kind of what you've indicated, like a big heart, big teddy bear. I mean, Ozzy made him sort of infamous, or you know, not infamous, but you know, viral before it was viral with the whole, you know, how he would call him out of the bullpen. You know, I mean that thing went viral even before he could even know that what that word was. Was he a big teddy bear? You know, knowing all that people thought he was this bigger than human being.
He was, like I said, you know, he was a gigantic guy, but he was like a 12-year-old at times too, right? He would let his emotions show, and he would get upset and he would get angry like everybody does, but he loved to pull pranks on guys. He loved to do, you know, kid things almost. He used to do stuff, and it was good-heartedness. It wasn't, there was no evil intent or bad intentions to it. It was just him, and he loved just being around the guys. And yeah, he was a big teddy bear. Once you got past that big, bad, tough exterior, he would just be Bobby. And, you know, it's a sad day for his family. It's a horrible day and a horrible news and a horrible day for White Sox. But, you know, prayers to his family, prayers to his children. Just everybody that knew Bobby, it's just an awful day.
For sure, and I'm sure next week one will be a celebration of him as well as the championship, AJ. I really appreciate it. I know you're with family. Thank you so much for jumping on. We'll see you next weekend.
All right, Jesse, thank you. All right. RIP Bobby, we miss you.
You got it. You got it. Well said. That's A.J. Pierzynski, former World Series winning catcher. And I was trying to get it out. Like, you think about it. Everyone knew who Bobby Jenks was, in part because Ozzie Guillen would be very dramatic in the way he called him out of the bullpen. But that was a time before there was an internet or anything. You know what I mean? Like, but everyone knew. You know, the highlight would have its own version of viral. It was pretty funny to just think about that and that how that all sort of evolved. But he was just a big teddy bear off the field and a flamethrower on the field. So some good memories there by A.J. Pierzynski. Appreciate his time. We'll take a break here and get ready to talk to Josh Barfield. We'll talk a little bit about Bobby with him. Obviously, Josh wasn't around the team back in the day when Bobby was pitching. But we'll also spin it forward to Colson Montgomery's debut last night. So much to talk about regarding that. So much to talk about at this time of year with an executive on a team, especially the White Sox assistant GM in terms of the draft. He has his hands on that. Player development, he has his hands on that. I'm sure he has his hands a little bit on the trade deadline as well. So a good time to talk to Josh Barfield. We'll do that in a few moments. It's Jesse Rogers on White Sox Weekly here till 7:30 on ESPN 1000. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers with you until 7:30, and then it's pregame baseball, White Sox and Rockies, and then just after 8 o'clock, they'll tip off first pitch. Casper and DJ will be on the call of that one. Rockies and White Sox, game two of that series, Marquez versus Jonathan Cannon. White Sox took the opener 3-2 last night. Great game, great win. And, of course, it featured the debut of Colson Montgomery, went 0-for-2 with a walk, strikeout, and he reached base on a catcher's interference. The first player in the modern era, at least as far back as they could go, basically, to reach base via catcher's interference in his very first plate appearance. Think about that. Guy's up there, been waiting his whole life to play. He swings. He hits the catcher's glove. But he got awarded first base. So he did get the first, had a chance with the bases loaded later, hit a soft liner to first base, eventually did get a walk in the game, but 0-for-2 with that catcher's interference. So wasn't about offense, though, for him. It was about what he did in the field. I mentioned before the break going viral. Bobby Jenks went viral in whatever way you could go viral 20 years ago. Well, Colson Montgomery went viral last night. First of all, he made the first play of the game. Here's your first inning of shortstop. Leadoff man hits the ground into short. You got the first one out of the way. But in the second inning, with a runner on third, two outs, two men on actually, he goes and he pulled out his basketball skills there. Right? He was a great basketball player in his amateur days. Well, he went leaping behind shortstop area into the outfield in left center there for a diving catch. To end the inning and prevent the Rockies from scoring. And when you consider this was a one-run game, you'll understand that that was a big play, even though it was the second inning. So we're going to break down Colson Montgomery's start with Josh Barfield. Is Josh ready, Brendan? Is that what you're telling me? He is now. There we go. Josh Barfield, the assistant general manager of the Chicago White Sox, joins me. I believe he's in Denver. Josh, am I right? Were you there for the win last night?
I was. It was a great win. Got to see Colson make his debut and a good fireworks show afterwards. So, yeah, it was a good day all around.
Yeah, the fireworks probably not as good for the home fans after a loss, but the visitors will enjoy it a little bit more for sure. Well, Josh, great to talk to you on White Sox Weekly here. Always good to see you at the ballpark. So let's break down Colson's first game. I mean, I know you – I was about to ask you if you've ever seen – a player in his first at-bat reach on catcher's interference, but I know the answer to that because it's never happened before. What did you think when he swung? Did you think it was just a ground out to second, or did you see it right away?
No, I thought it was a ground out to second, and then it's going through my mind is, why is he not running? This is your first major league at-bat, and you're not going to run down the line. So, yeah, it made a lot more sense once they cleared it up.
Yeah, what did you think of his at-bats overall? I thought, you know, there was some nasty stuff thrown at him. Some nasty off speed he swung through, but I thought he had some decent at bats for sure.
Yeah, he did. You know, the nerves on the first day are it could be overwhelming. I thought he did a good job of keeping the heartbeat slow. And, yeah, I mean, he faced some pretty good arms, you know. So this, look at the Rockies' record. You know, you wouldn't think they'd have the arms that they do, but they have some guys with stuff. And, yeah, I thought especially that at-bat he had later in the game when he got it to 3-2 and was able to walk. You know, typically in that situation when you're set up, you're going to chase there. So, you know, really good to see. And, yeah, I expect him to just get more and more comfortable as he gets more ABs under his belt.
And look, Josh, I saw a little bit of your playing career. You didn't have the hops that he showed on that play. I don't think I've ever seen you leap like he did.
No, I haven't seen many people make that catch. That was unbelievable. From my vantage point, it's in my own plate. At no point did it look like he had any chance of catching that. You know, big situation right there. Two outs, runner on base, like that. The run would have scored right there. So, you know, you look back, it was a tremendous catch and, you know, played a big part in the win yesterday.
For sure. Visiting with assistant GM of the White Sox, Josh Barfield. And so, Josh, for people that haven't followed it as closely, Colson's journey just this season is a book in itself. And I really want to get to you. You're a player development guy. You did such a great job with the Diamondbacks who debuted a lot of young guys and made it to the World Series a few years ago. And I know you have a hand in player development here. So April 29th, he sent back to your spring training complex in Glendale, Arizona, to work on his swing after going 0-for-11 the final 2 days of AAA. But he was struggling before that. He returns to AAA on May 13th. He gets promoted on July 4th, and we see what he is all about last night. But that journey is pretty unusual. I assume that idea of sending him back to Glendale was a tough decision to make because it's not something you normally do with a guy that's not rehabbing or whatnot. Take us through that whole journey there, starting with the idea of sending him back.
Yeah, you know, so it was definitely a tough decision. You know, He kind of had a tough spring training, right? With I think it was his first game against the Cubs in Major League Camp. He gets a home run, and you know, you feel like, all right, we're in a good spot. Now we go. He had a good offseason, and then he had the back issues, and you know, missed some time, and it ended up being a little bit more time than you know than we were initially expecting. So, you know, anytime you're a young player, really any player, spring training is so crucial, getting those at bats and the timing. But when you're a young player and you miss that time, you know, it kind of puts you behind the eight ball to start the year. So. He never really got in a good spot, you know, down in Charlotte to start the year. And, you know, he really just didn't look like himself. And, you know, there's probably some pressing in there knowing he's so close to the big leagues and things like that. But, you know, just from a mechanical standpoint, he had just gotten a little bit out of whack. And, you know, we were working to address it. I thought our hitting group, you know, did a really nice job. Zinter, our hitting coordinator, Ryan Fuller, our director of hitting, you know, they were working to attack it, you know, in between games. And, you know, then you go out there in the games and you're trying to work on these things. But when you're talking about hitting, and it's just so tough, especially in today's game, and trying to make adjustments while you're out there trying to compete, it's not really conducive. So after talking with the group, you know, we decided the best thing was for him just hit pause, you know, be able to really focus on the mechanical things that we wanted him to address. And, you know, we could, you know, slowly reinsert him as we saw him get more and more comfortable. So to his credit, you know, I don't think at first he was really excited about it, which we you know, to be expected. He's a competitor, which we love.
Yeah.
But once he understood why we were doing it, we brought up different examples of guys that had done this. You know, one that came to mind was that I experienced with was we did this with Geraldo Perdomo, you know, a few years back in Arizona when he was really struggling AA, and we pulled the plug, and his was for like weeks. I mean, he ended up finishing the year in the big leagues and was an all-star a year or two later. So, you know, there's different examples that you could point to show them that, you know, this isn't unprecedented. And we want to be as proactive as we can with these guys, especially knowing how close some of them are. So he did a great job down there. He's working with Ryan Fuller day in and day out. And, you know, they watched a lot of video. They talked a lot. They got him in a really good mindset. We were able to reinsert him in some rookie ball games there to kind of work on it. And then once he felt like he was in a good spot, we sent him back out to Charlotte. And, you know, you never know how the guys are going to respond to this. You always hope there's going to be an immediate positive response, but you just never know. But for him, you know, he kind of hit the ground running once he went back. You know, he had the multi-home run games. And really, just from our standpoint, the swing just looked a lot cleaner. You know, it looked a lot more like the Colson that we were accustomed to seeing, you know, in years past. And, you know, he was able to build some momentum down there, and we felt like he was in a good spot and ready to come up here.
And is the difference when you go from the, I don't know if the word is, you know, bad habits to the good ones, that it becomes second nature. That the, you know, once they take hold, the hitter's not thinking anymore. He's just reacting, but his movements are the correct ones. Is that kind of the way it works?
Yeah, you know, I think when it starts going bad, you start chasing results. You start chasing hits specifically. Nobody likes to stand in that box and see a one something average, and you know, you start trying to get, you know, five hits a night. And really getting out of yourself, and then the mechanics start to break down, and it's, you know, it can kind of spiral from there. So yeah, I think you start to you get to a place where you feel rock solid with the mechanics, and you have to think less about them in the games, and then it's just going up there competing. Let me get a good pitch to hit and compete. And I think that's where, you know, we really saw him, you know, down the stretch there in Charlotte.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that others have done it. You gave an example of one of your guys in Arizona, but it is a little bit innovative. But I am fascinated by the idea of hit pause on a baseball season, because it is a long, long year. I mean, you can hit pause, you can be sent back to Glendale, you can go to Double A, Single A, and still have a long season. Like, the idea of hitting pause on a baseball season, I do think is fascinating. I remember a manager telling me he'd love to send his star players home for a week if it was socially acceptable, you know, if the world would, but just to give them a break, because it's such a long year, whether it be for load management purposes or because you're struggling. That idea of hitting pause, I think, actually resonates. Maybe it's more of a new age thing, but I think there's something to it.
Yeah. You know, I just think from a mental standpoint, especially for a position player, it can just really, really weigh on you, because you wake up in the morning, the first thing you think about is, man, tonight I got to find a way to grind out a couple of hits. And, you know, like I said, you start chasing those numbers, you start, it becomes like the only thing you can think about, you know, day in and day out. So being able to take a mental break too, like there's a lot of value in that. I think it allowed him to kind of reset. It also gives you a line in the sand, right? You can say, okay, we've made these changes, and now we can start looking from this date on and kind of seeing what those results look like, instead of, you know, saying, all right, well, I'm already 150, 200 at-bats in of, you know, having a 500 OPS, and I'm trying to dig my way out of that. It kind of frees your mind up a little bit.
Visiting with Josh Barfield, assistant GM of the Chicago White Sox. Jesse Rogers with you on White Sox Weekly. Real quick, the broadcast made it sound like he had a big smile on his face throughout the day and night. How was your interaction with him after the game or today? Has he still got a smile on his face?
Yeah, he's still on cloud nine, right? It's a lifelong dream for him. And, you know, I think he appreciates it even more now, just knowing, you know, there are some bumps in the road in the journey, you know. So I think he appreciates it more. And he was able to have his family and friends and agent out here to celebrate with him. So it was really cool. It was almost surreal. I know he mentioned it too. He was here, he said, during the draft. So, he said it was a full circle moment for him getting to come back to Colorado and make his debut here. And It was almost out of a movie too. You know, we win a game. He's got a big part in the win. And then afterwards, they brought like 15,000 fans from the stands. I mean, this is a cat game last night, and they had them all in the outfield. They put on an unbelievable fireworks show, and he got to sit there and watch it, enjoy that with his family and friends. It was a really special day for him.
Yeah, that is a movie-like moment for sure. And there's been a lot of kind of movie-like moments. 11 players have made their debuts this year. There's a lot of fun in that, obviously. You know, you want that all to turn into wins someday. But as an executive, to see the smiles on these guys' faces must be something. Edgar Caro hits his first home run last night. Like, you're going through a lot of firsts, Josh. And that does provide a little energy. Is it what you had hoped for as this season started, that these guys would come up and at least, if the wins weren't there, give you moments and reasons to be excited about the future?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think anytime you go through, you know, the rebuild that we've kind of been going through, you have these plans and you talk about the future, right? That's the guiding light. And you know, I think Getsy's done a good job of kind of laying out the vision. And you know, so many of these young guys that we either drafted or acquired are a big part of that. And, you know, they're names on the board as you, like, draw out, like, this is what it's going to look like in, you know, 2025, 26, 27. But to see them start to, you know, make their debuts and be out here contributing to wins and competing and holding their own, whether that's the Mydrops, the Caros, the Teals, the Montgomerys, you know, a lot of the young arms, like, yeah, you see it start to come together and it makes it fun. And, you know, we're playing better baseball this year, which is encouraging. You know, you want to continue. It's all about winning up here. You know, you can talk about the moral victories, but in the end, it's all about winning. But, yeah, you can see us building towards something, which is fun. It's encouraging.
I know you only have a couple more minutes, so I got to ask you, though, the life of an assistant GM this month, especially I heard you in another interview say you do try to put your hands in a little bit of everything that's going on. So are you involved in the player development, in some of the trade deadline stuff, and obviously the draft as well? Is it all under your purview?
Yeah, you know, this is the busiest month of the year. I was literally just talking to Josh Rojas in the clubhouse about it. He said, what is this month like? I said, it's a lot. You know, it's fun, though, right? Because you can put yourself in the organization in such a better position, you know, if you do a good job through this, you know, these next few weeks. So, you know, we're excited. We've just spent a lot of time meeting, talking about players. I went out and saw, you know, probably about 30 or 40 of the top amateurs and over the course of the season. And, you know, so feel pretty good about where we are as far as our preparation. We're going to have a lot of meetings this week. A lot of the cross-checkers and everybody will be coming in starting tomorrow in Chicago, and we'll meet all the way up through the draft. So, you know, it's a good. There's some good players out there this year. You know, we feel really good about the preparation, and yeah, I'm excited to see who we get. And then now with the draft being pushed back to the All-Star break, you know, it kind of flows. You get to take a breather right after that last pick, and then it's like, all right, we're right into the deadline for the next couple of weeks. So, fun, exciting time in our seat.
Well, how many calls did you get today about Adrian Hauser? Because when you can pitch in Colorado, you can pitch anywhere. And he was great once again. What a story he's been. And I assume Chris and yourself are getting some calls for him.
Yeah, you know, he's going to be a popular name. Everybody needs pitching, I think, when you see all the arms going down across the league. And, you know, not just pitching, but, you know, impact pitching. And what he's done for us here has been tremendous. I mean, it's hard to put a value on how much he's been important to this staff. So, because it's not just going out there competing, he's going deep in games. That, you know, every time he takes the ball, and you feel really good about your chance to win every time he takes the mound. And he's been great in the clubhouse. So yeah, it's a credit to our pro scouting department. You know, they were on him early, and you know, when the opportunity came to go out and acquire him, you know, we were fortunate enough to get him. And yeah, he's been great.
Last thing, Josh, kind of a sad day for the organization. I know you weren't around the team in 2005, but Bobby Jenks was a larger-than-life figure, you know, literally and figuratively, and it's unfortunate he passes away here a week before the reunion. But I imagine he'll be a big part of what goes on next weekend in spirit, if not in body. So, you know, condolences to the whole organization.
Yeah, you know, really sad to hear that news today, and, you know, my heart goes out to his family and loved ones. You know, I got to play against him, got to face him a few times, and you know, he was larger than life, and you know, he was ahead of his time. You know, he had stuff that guys have today. You know, you didn't see 100 with a nasty breaking ball back then very often. And you know, getting over here to the organization and just realizing how beloved he was by these fans here and how important he was to the organization, yeah, it's definitely a sad day for the lifetime.
My research was lacking. I did not know you faced him. That's interesting. Was it a tough battle for sure?
Yeah, it wasn't a fun at bat. I don't remember. I don't know if I got a hit off. I remember. I think it was Creedy making like a diving play on a ball hit down the line and, to save the game. But yeah, he was nasty when he came in. You knew you were in trouble.
Yeah, you certainly did. Josh, thank you so much for taking the time. Good luck tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You got it. That's Josh Barfield, assistant GM of the Chicago White Sox, player development guy, some success stories there. I think that Colson Montgomery journey is really, really interesting. And I like the idea of hitting pause. Let's figure this out now. Let's not wait till the offseason. Let's not just continue with the bad habits. Let's not try to figure it out with a game 12 hours from now and then 24 hours from that. You know what I mean? Like, I like that idea. Sometimes you got to hit pause. And the baseball season allows for you to do that and still have a good season, potentially. And we'll see. We'll see what the rest of this year brings with Colson Montgomery, if he's up here for good, looking to get his first career hit, of course, after making that great diving catch. I guess he has his first web gem in the big leagues. Now he's still looking for his first tip. All right, we'll open up the phone lines next, 312-332-3776. If you want to reminisce about Bobby Jenks, if you go back, you know, 20 years or so as a Sox fan, if you're a younger fan, you're just learning about Bobby Jenks, would love to hear from you. If you had an interaction with him, all that. Well, wide open, talking Bobby Jenks, the White Sox, Colson Montgomery. We can spin it forward to what's going on this month with the draft and the trade deadline. This is White Sox Weekly. It's your show. 312-332-3776. Jesse Rogers filling in for Jeff Miller. We're back in a moment on ESPN 1000. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers with you till 7:30, so about another hour left in the show, and then it's White Sox pregame, and then it's the Sox and the Rockies from Denver. Len Casper, Darren Jackson standing by for the call of that game as the White Sox look to win the series, as they had a nice win last night in Denver. Colson Montgomery's debut there. 11 players have made their debuts this season for the Chicago White Sox. That was probably the most anticipated in a lot of ways, because he's first-round pick from a few years ago. It's not like the White Sox just traded for him and they brought him up like a few other players. He's been their guy, kind of. And he's the shortstop of the future, hopefully, you know, a key position. So it was great to see him make that debut and make that great catch in the second inning. Went 0-for-2, got on base on a catcher's interference as well as a walk. So still looking for his first major league hit. Scott Merkin from MLB.com will join me in just a few moments. We'll talk more about Montgomery's debut and this young team moving forward, as well as the news of the day, which broke about an hour before I went on the air, and that's Bobby Jenks, former closer of this team back in the mid-2000s there. He passed away, form of stomach cancer. It happened yesterday. The news kind of broke this afternoon. The team has put out a few things on YouTube and some other areas, and also a press release they sent out. Here's Paul Konerko from that press release. Quote, "Just a sad day for his family and friends, former teammates, and all White Sox fans. Everyone remembers him as a big guy and tough competitor who could throw 100, but he's really a big teddy bear off the field. Bobby was such a big part of our success and was on the mound at the end of the game for some of the biggest wins in White Sox history. He truly will be missed by all." Here's Ozzie Guillen. I mentioned this about 45 minutes ago, but I think it's worth repeating. "Bobby Jenks is one of my all-time favorite players. I love that man. This is a very sad day for everyone involved with the White Sox. Everyone remembers the moment when I called for the big fella in the World Series. So the bobblehead of that moment will be a great way to keep that moment alive for White Sox fans. Everyone has a favorite story about Bobby. So the 2005 reunion will be a great opportunity to get together with all his teammates and coaches and relive some of our greatest memories of him." That's from former manager Ozzie Guillen, of course, referencing the reunion, which is taking place next weekend, just a week after Bobby passed. Not sure he could have made it either way, but it's just sad that he wasn't able to at least experience it from afar as he passed away yesterday, announced today. I'm going back to that press release. He died in Portugal, where he was getting treatment for a form of stomach cancer, just 44 years old. Here's Jerry Reinsdorf. "We have lost an iconic member of the White Sox family today. None of us will ever forget that ninth inning of Game 4 in Houston, all that Bobby did for the 2005 World Series champions and for the entire White Sox organization during his time in Chicago. He and his family knew cancer would be his toughest battle, and he will be missed as a husband, father, friend, and teammate. He will forever hold a special place in all our hearts." Jenks pitched six seasons with the White Sox from 05 to 10. He was 14-18 with a 3.40 ERA, but it was the work he did in the ninth inning that was most impressive. 173 saves, including four in the 2005 postseason. Remember, he only had six regular season saves. I mean, he basically burst onto the scene in 2005, and then he was their closer for 4 or 5 years after that. But in 05, it was all about the postseason, where he earned four saves en route to the White Sox winning the World Series over Houston. He ranks among the franchise relief leaders in saves, second, appearances six, strikeouts seventh. He was an all-star selection in 2006 and 2007 after making his debut July 6th, 2005. So the anniversary, of course, of his debut is tomorrow. He just didn't make it, unfortunately, to that anniversary or the White Sox World Series reunion, which will take place next weekend. This is from Jenks during his last interview with Sox TV in the summer of 24. Quote, "You play for the love of the game, the joy of it. It's what I do. It's what I love to do. I'm playing to be a world champion. That's what I wanted to do from the time I picked up a baseball. Bobby Jenks passed away at age 44. We'll talk more about it with Scott Merkin, who's been covering this team for over 20 years. So we'll talk about Bobby Jenks and, of course, today's White Sox team as well. Scott Merkin from MLB.com joins me next. Jesse Rogers on White Sox Weekly, filling in for Jeff Meller. Stay tuned on ESPN 1000. Hour number two of White Sox Weekly. We're with you every Saturday, 2 hours before the pregame show. I'm Jesse Rogers, sitting in for Jeff Meller. A late edition of White Sox Weekly is the White Sox playing a night game tonight in Denver, Cannon versus Marquez. That's on tap. White Sox looking for win number two of the series. We'll get to that in about an hour, but we will discuss it with our next guest, along with the news of the day, the passing of Bobby Jenks. He's the great Scott Merkin. He's covered the White Sox for, what is it, 23 years now, Scott? I'm sure I'm shortchanging you, because you may be
23 years, as I always tell people. I started when I was 11.
I got it. I was right on the money, 23. And, yes, yeah. You are just 39 years old. Exactly right. Welcome to the show, Scott. As always, thank you for your time.
Sure.
Kind of a tough day. Not a day that is shocking, but as AJ said to me last hour, still surprising. You covered this guy's entire career. He was literally and figuratively larger than life and contributed in such big ways on and off the field to the White Sox. What are your thoughts as you've covered even his illness here as the news broke this afternoon?
Yeah, I talked to him, you know, in February, like right at the start of spring training. I was getting ready to go to the ballpark, and he called me from Portugal. And we had set it up, and, you know, he still was Bobby. He still had that same spirit. I'm a big crier, so I hope I don't break down during this. But, you know, he had the same spirit, but you could tell he was tired. He had been affected by what, and he told me the story of what he had gone through. And, I mean, the word strength comes to mind with Bobby just from, you know, from everything from other players talking about how he was the strongest human they'd ever seen to just what he fought through. And the stuff he told me, like, if you went through one of the things he went through, it would have been taxing on your body, let alone all he went through. But yeah, I wrote the story, and I go back, I was there for his first game, and I remember one of the first pitches hit 100 miles an hour on the scoreboard, and you could hear the crowd gasp. Like, you could hear them like, holy cow, that hit 100 miles an hour, this guy's something, you know. I remember him being in spring training. I don't think a lot of us talked to him. No one really knew much about him. He had come over from the Angels, I believe, and he turns out getting the last, you know, out of the 2005 World Series. I don't think there's a Sox fan or follower alive who doesn't have that image of AJ jumping into his arms ingrained in their mind forever, right? And the thing about him is just a really, you know, solid dude. Like, everyone has said, big heart. You know, I was talking to Bill Waluski, who is the general manager for the Windy City Thunderbolts, where Bobby managed last year and then took a year off. And you talk to other people, and he was a really good manager, too. He was very dedicated, but they said that he enjoyed baseball, and he was able to impart that on his players, that, hey, when it's time to work, let's work. But he also enjoyed baseball, too. And just a fun guy to cover, a fun guy to have conversations. I've had some really good conversations with him over the years. And, man, 44 is just way too young.
Yeah, it really is. You're right. That is kind of the shocking thing. Even though the World Series was 20 years ago, and you think, oh, he must be in his 60s. Like, you know what I mean? Like, 44? Really? Because he retired a while ago, but he retired at a young age. I was shocked when I saw that he was only 44. I mean, this, I don't understand whatever this form of stomach cancer was, but just must have been just terrible. I mean, it must have been terrible on him.
And when I talked to him, it was interesting. You know, I asked him about, you know, were you surprised when you heard the word in typical Bobby form? He kind of laughed and said, you think? And then, but then he said he wasn't. And I, you know, this quote has been talked about a little bit, that he said about how with all the stuff he put in his body over the years, he was surprised that he made it as long as he did, and kind of gave a little cautionary tale to people reading about, hey, you gotta be careful, you know, exercise, nutrition, that kind of thing. And I think the saddest thing is, well, not the saddest thing. There's so many sad things he leaves behind, you know, six kids and a wife he loved. And, you know, he was just getting going in this next part of his career and everything, which is kind of secondary to the family, obviously. But he had gotten healthy like the year before. He told me he had stopped drinking. He had stopped, you know, all that stuff. And he was he was healthy. And then this, you know, took him down, which is just terrible.
Yeah. AJ mentioned that as well, that he had turned around some of those bad habits. And I like some of the messages you were telling me he was giving his players, because baseball for young players can kind of, it can be sort of boring, if that's the right word, if you don't.
Right.
But here's the thing. You have to work at it. In order to have fun, you have to play it the right way. Like, you can't have fun and play bad baseball. That's what I always told my son's team. And I like that message even at an older age, as these kids are trying to turn pro or whatever. Like, you got to work hard to play good baseball, because that's when it becomes fun, when you are having success.
Right.
So I like that message he was giving, and it's just too bad he couldn't continue to give it.
You know what's funny is I was talking to Grant Taylor, who has become a really good quote in a very short period of time with the White Sox. And he was. I asked him about, you know, are you liking life as a reliever? Because obviously he wanted to start and may someday start, but right now he's a closer pretty much. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, this is good. He goes, I'm playing baseball. You can't do much better than that. And I think Bobby understood that point, right? I think Bobby had to fight through a lot of things in his life to get to that point. And I think he really loved being a baseball player on the South Side, too. I think he really embraced how the White Sox fans embraced him. And, you know, he came back to the South Side of sorts. You know, it's in, I believe it's Crestwood, right, where the Windy City Thunderbolts are. So, and, you know, let's be honest, it's a fun league, but you're trying to either hang on or really trying to get someone to notice you to get into affiliated baseball, right? And he gave them kind of inspiration, I should say. When I went to the home opener where Toby Hall, who was former White Sox catcher and a really close friend of Bobby's, is now managing in what was then Bobby's interim absence.
Right.
I talked to one of the pitchers, I believe his name is Buddy Pendel, and he was talking about how cool it was just to have a guy who excelled in major leagues coaching, managing pitchers, and how he could look at one bullpen and kind of make adjustments right away. You know, obviously everyone changes over life. You hope so. You know, I hope to it someday. But, you know, I think he probably matured as he went on.
Yeah.
But I don't think he lost the fun, which is the best part. And, you know, what I was told is, you know, he was a really good manager. When it was time to work, he worked his butt off. But he also understood how to let them kind of enjoy playing baseball. And, you know, it's sad that he didn't get to, I mean, like I said, sad in a secondary way, but sad that he didn't get to kind of cultivate that part of his life a little more.
Yeah, no, well said, Scott, well said. Visiting with Scott Merkin from MLB.com. He's covered the White Sox for 23 years. You mentioned Grant Taylor. Man, I don't think you've been around a team in 23 years that's debuted so many players. I mean, 11, that's second most in the big league so far, and we're not even at the All-Star break. That does provide some storylines, does it not? I mean, you must be having some fun writing about these young kids.
No doubt. I mean, this is a good crew, and this is kind of what the rebuild is about, right? And you don't want to take anything away from the veterans who are there and playing important roles and helping these young guys and contributing on the field, too. It's not like they're just, you know, sitting in the back and saying, no, here's how you should do it, and not playing. They're out there playing too. But let's be honest, it's the rebuild, it's the core, it's, you know, moving forward with Chris Getz's vision, which you hear talked about by a lot of people who work with him, work for him. And I think you're starting to see some of the manifestation of it. And I wouldn't even judge that much the results by this year. Now, obviously they count, they matter, and the team is going to, you know, finish well below 500 barring some sort of second half miracle. But I think this is kind of what these young guys are learning about baseball, right? They're getting, some of them a full season, some of them a half season, some of them maybe even a little less. And by the time 26 comes around, they'll kind of know where they have to go. They'll kind of have, I know Jordan Leisure has talked about how much he learned from playing last year, even though he, you know, had kind of mixed results on the field taking into this year. And I think they'll take a lot out of what they gained this year going into next year. But yeah, there's great stories. I mean, Colson, you know, the highly touted guy going into 2024 was the ninth ranked prospect overall on our MLB pipeline, top 100. Fell out of that, had to go to Arizona for, you know, kind of a tutorial reset. Maybe not tutorial, but just kind of a reset overall. And now worked his way back to the majors, and we'll see how he goes taking off. We're not going to list them all, but I mean,
sure.
You know, Grant Taylor has been unbelievable. And Grant Taylor was tremendous. We didn't get to talk to him right after the game Wednesday. But when he, you know, lost the lead in the ninth and he walked a couple guys, he was tremendous just about how, you know, hey, I'd be naive to, I wrote about that in my newsletter today, but I'd be naive to think that I was going to come up here and be perfect every time, he said. So you got to learn from the bad and the good, and that's what they're kind of all doing at this level right now.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly learn more from the bad moments. I got a tough one for you. All right, you mentioned Montgomery. Maybe that would be your answer. Who do you think is sort of going to be the most interesting story. I mean, I like this Kyle Teal. Edgar Carroll hit his first home run last night. Maybe it will be Montgomery. Like, who might pop here, let's say, in the second half or going into 26? Like, is it the obvious guy, or is there a sneaky good one that you're there? Maybe it's Grant. Maybe it's him.
Well, I think Taylor's, you know, great to watch every time he goes out there. Anyone who, you know, a week ago today against the Giants, he threw 18 four-seam fastballs and 17 were above 99 miles an hour. So that's always fun to watch. I think you're right. The catching position has been as strong as I can remember for the White Sox with Teal and Carroll. But I think it's probably Colson, just because I think Colson is so important to the, you know, moving forward of this rebuild, you know, to going into that competitive step, which I think, you know, they kind of hope maybe by the second half of 26 that they'll be a really, you know, competitive team. And I think him being able to, now I'm not saying that's all on him. There's other position players coming. We talked about, you know, Kyle Teal, Chase Meidroff, Braden Montgomery is down in the minors. Looks like he's got a good, you know, five-tool talent set. But I think Colson is going to be a huge impact on how this team moves forward again, because, you know, Chris is big on building strength up the middle. And if you have him and he can prove that he can play shortstop all the time, and he can hit, and I'm not saying he has to be, you know, Ohtani, but just contribute offensively while doing defensively, that's a big step forward. The other one I would add quickly, if he does get a chance to come up, and I would think he will at some point, maybe mid-August, late August, is Noah Schultz, because this is a guy they look at who could be the top of their rotation for many years to come. So it would be very interesting to see what he does if he gets maybe 4 or 5 or 5 or 6 starts at the end of the year.
I mean, think about it. By the end of the year, half the team could have made their debut this season if they get to 13 or 14 players.
And, you know, they're going to trade some veterans at the deadline, right? I mean,
right.
I don't think there's a deal right now that will match like a Crochet deal or even the three-team, eight-player deal they made last year at the deadline. But they're going to trade some veterans. There's going to be some interest in some of these guys. So you're probably going to see the team get even younger as they move forward.
Trying to remember, I think I knew this at one time, the record for MLB debuts in a season. It might be 16 or 17. I could be making that up, Scott. We should look that up.
We'll hold it for now. We'll put an asterisk next to it right now.
Yeah, that sounds about it. Just knowing baseball, that sounds like that could. I don't think it's gotten to 20, right? A team debuting 20.
Awful. Even 16, 17 is a pretty good number, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty high right there.
I think that would be around the max. It's something we may have to look up in the second half as the Sox continue to debut guys. They have the second most debuts this year behind the Athletics, who have 12, so they're right behind with 11. Visiting for another minute with Scott Merkin from MLB.com. Plug your work, Scott. Where can we read you?
You know, MLB.com, WhiteSox.com. I'm at Twitter at Scott Merkin, so, you know, you can follow all that stuff.
Yeah, we learn a lot about your old cars and your old cottage cheese. Following you on Twitter. Right?
Yeah, I try not to have the old cottage cheese because that leads to bad problems. So,
well said. All right, Scott, the more handsome brother of the Merkin crew, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it, buddy.
I appreciate it. I think my two brothers would argue that, but I'll take it.
You got it. Take care, Scott.
Thanks.
All right, that's Scott Merkin. Known him forever, obviously. Usually I'm making fun of him, but not on the air. I got to respect him. He came on at a moment's notice. Appreciate his insight into Bobby Jenks, and you know, he covered the story, covered him when he was playing, and now covered his illness, talked to him, probably one of the last reporters to talk to him as well. So I appreciate the time from Scott Merkin. All right, lots of guests early on here. We're going to actually replay A.J. Pierzynski next hour, so you'll hear from him regarding the passing of Bobby Jenks. But time for some phone calls if you want to jump on. We have some other audio to play for you. But 312-332-3776, the number, if you want to talk about Bobby Jenks or the White Sox, last night's debut by Colson Montgomery, game going tonight with Marquez and Cannon going, whatever you want to talk about, 312-332-3776. It is White Sox Weekly till 7:30 right here on ESPN 1000. Back on White Sox Weekly, Jesse Rogers filling in for Jeff Meller. Jeff will be back next weekend for the anniversary of the 2005 World Series team. And speaking of that team, the White Sox have produced a documentary. Part 2 is out. We thought we'd play it for you as it features, at least a little bit, one Bobby Jenks in there who passed away yesterday. The White Sox announced it via his family today, 44 years old. So part two of the documentary does include Bobby Jenks. Here it is.
In September, when we went from however many games up it was, 15 and a half or something, down to a half a game, I think it was. So we're probably around 500, maybe a tick under, I don't know. Cleveland was just could not lose, and it just tightened up to a point.
And Cleveland was the pain in the neck for a long time in that division, and rightfully so, because for most of those years when they were finishing ahead, they had all-stars up and down the lineup, even at DH.
Two of the biggest games for me was in that the run Cleveland was having coming back. It was a really big moment for me. I had just blown back-to-back saves against Cleveland at home while they're making that push.
The pitch, a swing, and a line drive to center field. Rowan backs up. He jumps, and the ball's over his head. It goes to the wall.
Swung and bounced towards second. Coming home with a tying run is Johnny Peralta.
You know, Ozzie pulled me aside and said some colorful words, but the moral of it was, get your together, because you're going to be back out there tomorrow. You're our guy going forward.
The support we got through that, I can remember some of the signs and just the encouragement, because it would have been very easy to get right in the same boat as us and kind of be negative. But the fans were great during that last stretch, and I think that kind of put us over the hump.
We win tomorrow, we clinch. I never had pressure, the night before, I was with Ozzy and the bar, I used to, get a couple of glasses of wine, and he was like, we got a day game the next day. So he like, hey, you got to go rest. I'm like, why? Oh, we'll be fine. So the next day, we go to the ballpark together. We went to the ballpark like 9 in the morning. And they already had the lineup. So I saw the lineup, everybody right-handed. Uribe came to me like, hey, what do you think?
Nice pick and the gun, yes. Beautiful play by Uribe.
We're drinking champagne today.
Ball hit deep, he looks up, you can put it on the board, yes.
Two outs in the ninth inning, Tigers are down to their last out.
The day we clinch, I think that's the best celebration we have.
What a season the Sox have enjoyed in 05. Strengthening the starters, strengthening the bullpen, adding more speed, better defense, and guys who could play. And they have picked it up.
You know, the best part is seeing Frank Thomas at our hotel in Cleveland. We had just clinched and he beat us there outside with bottles of champagne. And, it was good to see him out there when the bus pulled up, start sprinkling champagne over everybody. And it felt good that, he was still rooting us on, even though he wasn't able to play with us.
Wow. Goosebumps, right? Goosebumps. That's part two of the documentary the White Sox produced on the 05 World Series. You heard Bobby Jenks in there, so sad that he will not be able to be around for it next weekend as the team gathers to celebrate. Bobby Jenks passed away yesterday at age 44. A form of stomach cancer got him. Man, does cancer suck. Tough news for White Sox fans. But he'll be remembered next weekend in a big way, I'm sure. Stories will be told. I had A.J. Pierzynski on last hour. You'll hear from him after the top of this hour as we continue to remember Bobby Jenks and talk about the White Sox, which is what Wyatt wants to do. Wyatt, you're on White Sox Weekly. What's on your mind?
Hey, Jesse. I was 7 years old when the White Sox won the World Series. And I remember the day Bobby Jenks made his debut was July 6th, I believe.
Yep.
My dad bought his jersey that day. Well, at the time, you had to customize it because he didn't have his jersey out. But he got one that day, wore it every game, and they won the World Series that year. It was awesome. I'll never forget that. But you brought up a good point about Colson Montgomery. Doesn't need to be Ohtani. Who does Colson Montgomery need to be by 2027, 2028 for this rebuild to even look okay. I have no faith in Reinsdorf. Was it Ishiba? I have faith in Ishiba, but when does he take the reins? I just think Colson Montgomery needs, if he could be three quarters of what Trey Turner is, I think the White Sox would be heading in the right direction. I just want to know what you think Colson Montgomery has to
do. Yeah, I mean, if this was 20 years ago, you want him to be just a good glove, doesn't matter what he hits kind of guy, but that's not the case. When you're drafting the first round, you're a big-bodied guy like that. Yeah, I mean, he's got to produce both in the field and at the plate. Now, it does start in the field when you're playing shortstop, right? He's not a left fielder. He's a shortstop. Automatically makes him one of the leaders of the team. You know, he just is. He'll be a leader of the team if he's a good player. He's just got to hold his own. Yeah, you're right. I think a poor man's, you know, pick a name, Dansby Swanson, Trey Turner, someone that with a little pop because of his size that it hits enough to be in the league, right? You can't hit 180. You got to be able to hit your weight at least. So I don't know what the ceiling is because we're starting at the floor with him, the way things have gone these last couple years. But, man, it does feel like he's taken that step since going to the spring training facility in Glendale there a couple months ago. So, yeah, you want to call him a poor man's, any of these starting shortstops that are big-bodied and stuff, fine. 15 to 20 homers, yeah, I'm in. Count me in. Solid defense, hit at least your weight kind of thing, and then hopefully the ceiling's even higher than that.
Yeah, start as a poor man and as a rich man. Hopefully that's what we can get.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Start as a poor man and as a rich man. If you do your job, you certainly will be. I mean, these guys are rich anyway, but yes, I know what you mean. Yeah, absolutely, Wyatt. Thanks for the call. Anything else? You good?
Yeah. No, that's it. Appreciate it.
You got it, Wyatt. Thanks for the phone call. 312-332-3776, the phone number if you want to jump on to talk a little bit about Bobby Jenks. He was 7 years old. I was actually on the radio in Chicago when they won. I was at a bar doing a show, and I think we stayed on the air like all night long, and it was a party. It was incredible. Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. Remember, combined between the Cubs and Sox, there weren't many winning seasons in during that time. In general, we haven't had a lot of winning baseball seasons here. But certainly the White Sox, you know, before and after, haven't had a moment like they did in 2005. So it was a party. It was a scene. And I do remember just staying on very, very late, just taking phone calls and, you know, everybody just excited. And, you know, baseball is just so different than the other sports, how it connects you from one generation to the next. You don't see that in the other sports. You just don't. And when a team wins a World Series, it's like I immediately called my dad or I immediately went to the cemetery and I put the banner there or the box score or something. And it's such a sport that connects families. It's weird that way because the other sports don't. So I remember just taking call after call after call. And, man, now I'm thinking about that highlight and thinking about Bobby Jenks and A.J. jumping in his arms. I like what A.J. said to me an hour ago. You'll hear it again in a moment. He's glad it was that way instead of Bobby jumping on him because, you know, it wouldn't have felt very good to A.J. being on the bottom of that one. All right, we'll take a break. And speaking of A.J. Pierzynski, you'll hear from him at the top of the hour here as we continue on White Sox Weekly. We've got White Sox baseball coming at the bottom of the hour. First pitch just after 8 o'clock Central Time right here on ESPN 1000. All right, welcome back. Another half hour left in the show, and we've been doing a lot of Bobby Jenks, remembering him and his great career with the White Sox. He passed away yesterday, age 44, due to stomach cancer. And I was so grateful that his catcher, A.J. Pierzynski, was able to call in at the beginning of this show to give us his memories of Bobby, Big Bobby, both on and off the field. So we thought we'd bring that back for you. Here's A.J. Pierzynski about Bobby Jenks.
Oh, just sad. I mean, just terrible news. You never really understand why. You know, this is something that had been kind of coming for a while, and
yeah.
But it doesn't make it easier, right? I know Toby Hall had been in touch with him, and he had been kind of keeping me updated. And I talked to Bobby not that long ago with some text messages back and forth, and I know he really wanted to try to make it to next weekend, and sadly, there's going to be a giant hole next weekend when all of us are together and he's not there.
For sure, but his name, his presence will be there, you know, and the stories that will be told. Ozzie said everybody has one. I mean, you were his catcher. I don't know where to start with you. What's your favorite Bobby Jenks memory? I'm sure you've told a few, whether it be on the field or off. There has to be plenty in both areas, you know, during pitching meetings in the clubhouse and also on the mound.
I mean, the favorite memory is jumping into his arms after we win the World Series 20 years ago. I just remember thinking to myself, as the play is happening and as the last out is made, do not let Bobby jump on you, because if you do, you'll never get up. So I had to make sure I jumped on into his arms. There's so many Bobby stories. He's a legend of, you know, I said this to Sam Blum. He was doing an article on him. Mm-hmm. It's like, he's like Paul Bunyan, right? He mm-hmm. came from, what, Idaho, the woods of like Idaho and Eastern Washington, and was just like this big lumberjack of a guy. But if you dug down through it, and listen, we all know Bobby had some problems, but mm-hmm. if you get through that, he had a good heart and he meant well. And, you know, it's just one of those things that, I don't even know how to put it into words, but there's so many Bobby stories and so many things about him and how good he was. I mean, one of my favorites, like I told, besides the World Series, is when Burley broke his record. You remember he set the record for the most consecutive guys retired at one point,
yep.
which is amazing for a reliever.
For sure.
Because he
yep.
was doing this three outs at a time. He wasn't doing, like, Burley threw the perfect game, and then he kept getting guys out when he broke that record. But, you know, Bobby to do that as a reliever is still just an incredible, incredible feat. And then I remember in the Metrodome, and we knew that Burley was getting close to Jenks' record. And when he broke it, I went out to the mound with Burley, and we both just looked in the bullpen at Bobby, and Bobby just had his head in his hands shaking, because his head, because he knew that we both knew what he was thinking. And, just things like that, little things with Bobby. He was a gigantic human being, but, you know, sometimes he was a 12-year-old kid playing baseball, and the fire he brought. And listen, Bobby was a guy that had 100 before 100 was
yep.
commonplace at all. He was like the first guy I saw through 100.
For sure. And that's what I wanted to ask you a little bit about is pitching, because we have younger fans listening. It's been 20 years, but not 20 years since the World Series. He was here after that for 5 years, saving games all over the place. But he was no sure thing. Fifth-round pick, 2000, like you said, out of the backwoods or whatever. You know, so it was not a sure thing. What made him as good as he was, just to be able to throw gas and throw it over the plate? I mean, it's, you know, control of the fastball is the first thing you need as a closer, right?
Well, he had 100 mile an hour before 100 miles an hour was, like I said, commonplace. I remember he came up and it was 98, 99. We're like, whoa. I remember PK was like, whoa, mm-hmm. first time we saw him.
Yeah.
And then he threw a curveball and you were like, whoa, this is even better. And then he could throw strikes. The thing about Bobby that we always said was if he threw it over the plate, nobody was going to – if he came into the game with a two- or three-run lead, guys weren't stringing together two or three hits. It was a walk, and then maybe he'd make a mistake, and a guy might run into one. But there wasn't many times where Bobby went out and gave up three, four hits in a row. His stuff was too good. Then he learned a slider, and his ball cut a little bit naturally. And then just his presence on the mound. I mean, hitters looked out there, and they saw 6'4", 6'5", and he was, you know, 300-plus. I wasn't somebody you really wanted to mess with very much.
For sure. Visiting with A.J. Pruszynski, World Series catcher, here on White Sox Weekly. Always love talking baseball with A.J., but unfortunately we need to talk about a former teammate of his, as Bobby Jenks passed away yesterday at the age of 44 due to stomach cancer. You know, have you talked to him much over the years, you know, before he got sick? What was his life like at those times? I didn't see him too much at the ballpark, but you know, I wasn't around the White Sox as much as you were. What was he like in the years afterwards?
I saw him every once in a while. I didn't talk to him a whole lot. He was living over, obviously, overseas. I know he was super excited about his job of, the Windy City team that he was coaching?
Right.
In Chicago. He loved doing that. I know him and Toby Hall were very tight. I think Bobby, I want to say Bobby was a coach maybe with the Rockies at one time, and he asked Toby to help him and come help him as a manager in the Rockies. I could be wrong on that, but I know. And then Toby took over for him this year. His life was better, honestly. Listen, we all know Bobby had his problems, but he got sober. He's mm-hmm. been sober for years, man. It's a credit to him, because the things that, you know, and he said this, the things he did to his body were not human. And the fact that he was still kicking after some of the things that he said he did was
great.
Was a miracle in itself. So, oh man, I mean, just, I was so proud of him, and everyone that, whenever I did see him, I did talk to him, you know, the fact that he had gotten sober, I mean, that was a miracle in itself because of what he had gone through. So, and he was moving on. He had a new family, and he was living over in Portugal. It just seemed like everything was going right, and then to be hit with this news was just awful.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. Last thing before I let you go, AJ, off the field, you know, big teddy bear kind of thing. That's kind of what you've indicated, like a big heart, big teddy bear. I mean, Ozzy made him sort of infamous, or you know, not infamous, but you know, viral before it was viral with the whole, you know, how he would call him out of the bullpen. You know, I mean, that thing went viral even before he could even know that what that word was. Was he a big teddy bear? You know, knowing all that people thought he was this bigger than human being.
He was, like I said, you know, he was a gigantic guy, but he was like a 12-year-old at times too, right? He would let his emotions show, and he would get upset and he would get angry like everybody does, but he loved to pull pranks on guys. He loved to do, you know, kid things almost. He used to do stuff, and it was good-heartedness. It wasn't, there was no evil intent or bad intentions to it. It was just him, and he loved just being around the guys. And yeah, he was a big teddy bear. Once you got past that big, bad, tough exterior, he would just be Bobby. And, you know, it's a sad day for his family. It's a horrible day and a horrible news and a horrible day for White Sox. But, you know, prayers to his family, prayers to his children, just everybody that knew Bobby. It's just an awful day.
That was A.J. Pruszynski with me a little while ago, about 90 minutes ago, right here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jesse Rogers sitting in for Jeff Miller. We've got White Sox baseball coming up at the bottom of the hour as we sort of sort through this terrible news. Again, he'd been sick for a while, and I think Sox fans had heard that kind of news but didn't know exactly what was the end result going to be in terms of when or whatever, if he had a chance to get better and if he could make it to the reunion. But it became kind of clear in the last few months that he would not be able to make it to the reunion, and he now passes away just a week before everyone was to gather here in Chicago to celebrate the 2005 World Series. And as it turns out, passes away 2 days to the anniversary of his debut in 2005, which was July 6th. He wasn't a big part of the first half of that team, but he was a big, big part of that team in the second half. Only had 6 saves in the regular season, but then he had 4 in the postseason and was a huge, huge contributor to the final moments with A.J. Pruszynski, his catcher. Just great to hear from A.J. Really appreciate him jumping on. But Bobby Jenks passed away yesterday, announced today by his family and by the team. He spent most of his career with the White Sox, all but 1 year. His final year was with the Red Sox, but he didn't even record a save with them. So all 173 of his saves came in a White Sox uniform. I mentioned the 6 regular season saves. That was followed by 41 in 2006, 40 in 2007, 30 in 2008, another 29 in 2009, another 27 in 2010. His ERA fluctuated as it does for closers, but he was a guy you could count on the back end of the bullpen, especially in 05 when he burst onto that scene, starting in early July and then finishing in late October. Bobby Jenks, again, one of the greats, and he'll be remembered next weekend as the White Sox gather to celebrate the 20th anniversary. I can't believe it's been 20 years of the 2005 World Series championship team. We've got White Sox baseball coming up at the bottom of the hour. That'll be the pregame show, and then they'll throw first pitch after 8 o'clock Chicago time out in Denver. Germán Márquez for the Rockies. Jonathan Cannon for the White Sox back on the mound after missing some time with an injury. White Sox had a thrilling win last night. Grant Taylor, great job late in that game after blowing his save in L.A., so he bounced back well. Sox were scrappy about that game, eked out a 3-2 win, thanks in part to Colson Montgomery's great defensive play in the second inning wonderful diving catch over his shoulder into the outfield as he prevented a run from scoring there. And obviously in a one-run game, that was a big play. He went 0-for-2, reached via a walk, but his first plate appearance was historic. He's the first player in modern history to reach first on a catcher's interference in his very first plate appearance. And that's what happened to Colson Montgomery yesterday. The first round 2022 pick of the White Sox finally made his debut. His journey this season has been quite something. Hits a home run in his first spring game against the Cubs, gets hurt, is kind of behind the eight ball, doesn't make the big league club out of spring training, starts the season in AAA, struggles. They make a very dramatic decision to pause his AAA season and send him back to Glendale to work on some things, plays in some games there for a couple weeks, makes it back to AAA, gets hot, gets called up, makes his debut, helps them win a game on his with his glove, and now still looking for his first career hit. But that journey is quite something. Putting a pause on your major league season. We talked to Josh Barfield, assistant GM of the White Sox, earlier in the show. And that's a big decision to put a pause on your season, not major league season, but minor league season, and go back to the basics, so to speak. They did that, and he had more success after that time in Glendale, and now he's up in the majors. It's a long season. A lot can happen. You can be sent back, brought up, sent down again. Like, it's crazy, the length of a baseball season and how many seasons you can have within that season. That's always interesting, whether it be a player or a team. 312-332-3776, the phone number. We'll play a little bit more audio for you when we come back. Some sights and sounds, so to speak, of Clayton Kershaw's historic 3,000th strikeout. Did that against the White Sox just the other day. You'll hear from Len and DJ on that in just a few moments. It's White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers in the stretch run. Jeff Meller will be back next weekend when the White Sox will gather for their 2005 reunion celebration of the World Series team. So that should be a fun weekend over on the south side of Chicago. We've got White Sox baseball coming up here in a few minutes. The White Sox and Rockies will have the pregame show for you as the White Sox go for the series win after winning last night. Now, I thought it was historic enough of a moment to relive a little bit from earlier in the week when Clayton Kershaw made history, striking out his 3,000th victim, just the 20th pitcher all time to do that, and I believe it was just the third to do it in one uniform, in the same uniform, all 3,000 strikeouts in a Dodgers uniform. So let's go back to the sixth inning on Wednesday. Vinny Capra at the plate.
The 1-2. Clayton Kershaw joins the exclusive 3,000 K Club. Kershaw takes off his cap to acknowledge the crowd. What a moment. Mickey's waving at his family now out in front of the Dodger dugout, and he's going to get hugs from all of his teammates on the field. 3,000 strikeouts for Clayton Kershaw.
Great call by Len Casper there. And, of course, the scene continued to unfold, and Len and DJ were there to witness it. I mean, you don't want too many historic moments to happen against your team, but this isn't like a no-hitter or whatever. You were, a perfect game against you. This is just someone was going to be the 3,000th victim, and it just happened to be Vinny Capra who played for the Chicago White Sox. So, of course, there was a lot of pomp and circumstance afterwards. I thought Len and DJ did a great job up in the booth telling us all about it. So let's relive that as well. Here's Len and DJ.
And he continues to get handshakes and hugs in the Dodgers dugout after becoming just the 20th member of the 3,000 strikeout club. What a moment.
Yeah, congratulations to Clayton Kershaw. Any true baseball fan, historian, can appreciate the accomplishment. And you're a fan. I'm a fan. We appreciate it. We want the White Sox to kick butt tonight, give them a loss. that's truly a fact. But when you do see history, it is nice to be in that presence. And congratulations to him and his family and the Dodgers, because he's done it all in the Dodgers uniform.
And there's no perfect time. Here it comes back out for curtain call. There's no bad or perfect time for a milestone. But the last pitch he throws tonight makes it a little extra special, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a great point. And in evaluating the last pitch, called a strike on Capra. He just barely nicked the outside edge of the plate away from the right-handed batter. But it was a strike. It was a perfect pitch for him to pick up number 3,000 on a hitter that, unfortunately, is going to go down to the record books as that number.
You can tell Clayton Kershaw looks maybe as relieved as he is ecstatic. Obviously an important milestone for him to reach, but he had to really grind to get there tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, as amazing as the feat is and being here and hopefully the Sox hold on to win a ball game, he's going to have a lot more strikeouts. This isn't his last of his career. It just is the milestone, and it's tonight.
Now Kershaw's basically saying, "Okay, we gotta carry on here." He's a little embarrassed,
you know. And I was told before the game that he is not somebody that wanted this acknowledgement to be a major deal. He is that humble guy, but you know he deserves these accolades. He is somebody special to this city. He's somebody special to this organization. And even though he may not want it, as we know in this industry and in most industries, when you reach something like he just accomplished, then it doesn't matter what you really want. It's what everybody wants to give you. It's like that day you say, "I don't want a big birthday party." Your family says, "Too bad."
Well said. All right, we've got a big league ball game to resume.
Great job by Len and DJ there, reliving that scene. I get goosebumps with these highlights. I really do. I really do, whether it be the 05 World Series team or just hearing from Bobby Jenks or Clayton Kershaw. These are moments that you don't come across all the time in baseball, right? I mean, the way the starting pitcher has been diminished, how many pitchers in the future are going to get to 3,000 strikeouts? I don't know. I was talking to a pitcher last year. We're like, it's trending towards they're going to just train everybody to be three-inning pitchers, you know, because going six or seven – maybe it'll all come back. Who knows? But going six or seven is quite the accomplishment these days. But there are still guys that do it. Tarek Skubal is the latest, right? Zach Wheeler likes to go deep in games. Maybe the White Sox will develop a few. Noah Schultz, we might see his debut soon enough. But, you know, to record 3,000 strikeouts, you got to go deep in a lot of games over many, many years. But I said this on the air the next day afterwards. Like, yes, that's impressive. Only 20 players have done it, so it's really is an incredible longevity sort of accomplishment. But I love the fact that he did it all in one uniform. I'm old school that way. I want to see my guy. Maybe you trade for a guy and he's in the minors with you. But whatever, even if you don't draft him, if he's within your organization early on in his career and he stays with you for 20 years or whatever the case may be, I love that. I love that. Only three pitchers recorded all 3,000 of their strikeouts with one team, and Kershaw is one of them. So I think that's as impressive as anything. That music means I've got to wrap things up. We've got White Sox baseball coming up. It's the White Sox and Rockies from Denver. It was a really good ball game last night. Let's see what tonight brings as the White Sox look to win the series. Have some thank yous to pass along. Kendra Smith, Luca Vitale, Brendan Riley for producing, of course, the broadcast. Also, AJ Przinski for joining me, mostly about Bobby Jenks. Great insight and memories from him. Josh Barfield, assistant GM of the White Sox as well. Great insight in terms of player development and what this time of year is like for executives with the draft coming up and soon after the trade deadline. Between the draft and the trade deadline, that's when things are going to get really crazy. White Sox should be involved as well. That's going to do it for me. Stay tuned for White Sox pregame. Thanks for listening to White Sox Weekly. Jeff Meller will be back right here on ESPN 1000.